an enemy force they had reckoned was at least 35 to their 7. But the issue was more than just superior numbers. Magus's enforcers, which looked like bipedal crosses between carnivorous dinosaurs and bulls, weren't actually bulletproof, but thanks to a horny knobby hide 2 inches thick and bone-like reinforced concrete, a squat 300-pounders came damn close to it. In fact, none of the companions had ever seen one downed by a bullet, or a dozen bullets. In a previous encounter, on Magus's remote Gladiator Island, they had learned the only way to kill the enforcers was by fire. On the temperature of their copious sweat, a potent secretion that smelled like a combination of ammonia, ether, and acetone was raised to ignition point, they turned into living blowtorches. With the sun baking his shoulders and back, Ryan watched the convoy heading for the barren mountains in the eastern distance. When he found himself looking at the rear of the last wagon line, he pulled back from the notch between sandstone boulders, stood up, and slung the Stire.
What now, lover?
A layer of desert dust had dulled Christie's usually radiant red prehensile hair. Her clothes and high boots were coated with grime. Perspiration mixed with rusty dirt smeared her forehead. The other companions were likewise tinted orange. Doc, Jack, Mildred, Ricky, and JB looked as if they'd just risen from shallow desert graves. Ryan knew there would be no graves for any of them if they lost the battle ahead, and the dying, when it came, would be triple hard. Gutted, disemboweled, and torn limb from limb, their remains would be scattered across the hardpan, fought over by muty coyotes, buzzards, and pincer-jawed skagworms.
We follow the convoy at a safe distance until the bastards stop to make camp. Wait until they're all settled in, nice and cozy. Then we use frag grins to disable the wags, stun the enforcers, and chill any sec men. Mop up the enforcers with the incendies.
They'd found the cache of AN-M14TH3 grenades among the corpses of a band of scavengers after a disagreement turned into a gun battle in the hills of what had been New Mexico. These grenades didn't explode, but when ignited, they burned for 30 to 45 seconds at 4,330 degrees Fahrenheit, twice the temperature needed to melt steel. The moment Ryan and the companions had laid eyes on the red canisters, they'd all known that the incendiary grenades would come in handy at some point, especially if they happened to cross paths with Magus and his nasty, sweating playmates again. And fate had granted them that favor.
We don't have enough gas and water left to follow the convoy for another day. We have to make our move tonight. It's been a hard and bloody road, but this is going to be Magus's last sunset.
Justice finally delivered, without mercy or restraint, swords buried to the hilt.
Even though Doc was the only one who carried a sword, there were grim-faced nods of agreement all around.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands, narrated by Richard Rowan, with performances by Terrence Aselford, Dolores King Williams, Colleen Delaney, Tim Pabone, Laura C. Harris, Michael John Casey, Michael Glenn, Christopher Sheeran, David Harris, Todd Schofield, Jonathan Church, Christopher Graybill, Jacob Yeh, Dylan Lynch, Rebecca Shear, Evan Casey, Kimberly Gilbert, and Scott McCormick. Deathlands number 121, End Day.
A short time later, after they'd gathered up their weaponry and backpacks, all the companions were remounted on the dirt bikes they'd acquired from the mountainside vill some 8,000 feet above the desert plain. Christie and Ryan, JB and Mildred, and Doc and Ricky were all riding double. Only Jack was riding solo.
Remember to stay clear of the road. Spread out and keep the speed down. If they bother to look back, they'll think we're a dust devil. They won't be able to hear our bike engines over their own racket. Jack, take point.